I hope that I'll be able to give tonight's topic over in a sensitive way. We're going to talk about some heavy stuff tonight. But that's the point of learning Torah, to talk about real things. The parshios that we find ourselves in, the parshios coming out of the world of Lech Lecha into the world of Vayera the Shabbos, is the world of Avram Avinu. And when we think about the world of Avram Avinu, we think about what made Avram Avinu into Avram Avinu. Chazal are pretty clear that Avram is molded, he's defined, he becomes Avram Avinu through the 10 tests of Avram Avinu. What exactly the 10 tests were, we don't have one conclusive opinion in Chazal. The Mishnah says, "Basara nisyonos nesnasa Avram Avinu." The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says there were 10 tests. Again, what exactly was the nature of Avram's tests? There are a range of opinions, a big machlokas. We often think that the first test is Lech Lecha Me'artzecha, go to Eretz Yisrael. But we also know that Rashi taught us in Noach that Avram was thrown into a fiery furnace before that. And we think that the last test is certainly the Akedah, that we can all agree on, right? The last test is Akedas Yitzchak. Not so simple. Rabbeinu Yonah says there's a test after the Akedah, when Hashem is putting Avram in a difficult situation to find the burial plot for Sarah. And he's dealing with a charlatan named Ephron. And he's negotiating, and all he wants to do is bury his beloved Sarah. So there's maybe even tests after the Akedah. But certainly that feeling that many of us have, that it starts with Lech Lecha Me'artzecha, and it ends with the Akedah, that's certainly one way that Chazal present the Nisyonos of Avram Avinu. And if you look in the first source, the Medrash Tanchuma tells us that Hashem says to Avram, where it's bolded, Nisayon HaRishon V'Nisayon HaAchron Eini Menasa Oscha Ela B'Lech Lecha. We're going to start with Lech Lecha, we're going to end with Lech Lecha. We started in last week's Parsha with Lech Lecha Me'artzecha, and we're going to wrap things up this Shabbos. Really, Avram's life, it goes by so quickly. Lech Lecha Vayera, these are the two Parshios of Avram Avinu. That's why the Svarim HaKadoshim bring a remez. They say if you take the gematria of Lech Lecha is 100, plus Vayera, this week's Parsha, Vayera is 217, is Gematria Avraham Avinu, 317. Avraham Avinu. This is Avraham Avinu, Lech Lecha and Vayera. So these are the parshas of Avraham Avinu. It starts with Lech Lecha. And last week's parsha ends with the Lech Lecha, says the Medrash, Al Eretz HaMoriah, on the way to the Akedah. Why Hashem needs to bookend it with the phrase Lech Lecha? I think the answer is, as many Sfarim explain, Lech Lecha, what's the point of a Nisayon? That's what we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about Nisyonos. And it's not an easy topic. It's not an easy topic. It's a very delicate and personal topic for everyone in their own way. And there's no simple answers. So all the questions you're going to have tonight, as I said to someone on the way in before, all the questions you have, I have also. We don't have all the answers, but hopefully it'll generate some thought. It starts with Lech Lecha, it ends with Lech Lecha. We started last week with Lech Lecha Me'artzecha, and we continue and end this week with Lech Lecha L'Eretz HaMoriah to the Akedah. But when you read the stories of Avram Avinu, we're not just learning about Avram Avinu. We're not just studying Avram Avinu, it's very clear to Chazal that everything that's happening to Avraham is really just paving a way for things that are going to happen to us. That the tests of Avram Avinu are really the tests of Klal Yisrael. As Chazal say, Maisa Avos Simon Labanim, which the Ramban popularized and gave many specific examples of. For example, in last week's Parsha, Avram comes to Eretz Yisrael and there's a famine in the land and he has to go down to Mitzrayim. Says the Ramban, this is in last week's Parsha, Avram went to Mitzrayim, we go to Mitzrayim. Avram is enduring famine, his wife is abducted, says the Ramban, so too Klal Yisrael in the future. Knesset Yisrael, the Jewish people, are going to also be hungry in Mitzrayim, will be fed matzah not only when they leave Mitzrayim, also in Mitzrayim, according to many Rishonim. And their wives will be abused by the Mitzrayim, and their babies will be killed. Everything that Avram is going through, all of the suffering of Avram, is really just a precursor, so to speak, a preview of what's going to happen to the Jewish people. The Ramban gives us a lot of the specifics of the Maisa Avos Simon Labanim. But the general is also true. Avram had tests and we have tests. Avram had 10 nisyonos, and every one of us, in our own way, has to go through over the course of our life. We may not have direct communication from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but in our lifetime, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm also sending you on missions, Lech Lecha. I'm sending you on a mission, Lech Lecha, to go to yourself, to discover yourself in a deep way. And every single one of us goes through tests in our life. The Moray Naim, who was the Magid of Chernobyl, the Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov, the Magid of Mezrich, in the second source, in Parshas Va'era, in the Moray Naim, he writes, Shetzorech kol echad ve'echad lavo lidei nisyonos. There's no one. You could be the best Jew. It's not a question for, if you're a bad Jew, you have nisyonos. You can be the best Jew, he says, and you have nisyonos. Everyone has tests. He writes where it's bolded, mikol makom menasin es kol echad be'eser nisyonos. Myself was similar to Bonham. If Avram had 10 tests, we have 10 tests. You might feel like I have a lot more than 10 tests in my life. I guess there are 10 tests at some point in our life, which is, you know, the defining moments of our life. Where they are, what they are, each one of us can reflect on our own lives and try to figure it out. But that's how the world was built. The world was built that there's going to be nisyonos. It's part of reality. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu is creating the world in Bereishis Perek Beis, and the Torah reflects on creation. It says, "Eile toldos shamayim va'aretz, hashamayim va'aretz behi baram." Chazal say in the Medrash, "Don't read it behi baram; read it ba'avraham." It's the same letters. Behi baram is the letters of ba'avraham. And the Medrash says, "The world was created b'zuchuso shel Avraham, in the merit of Avraham." And what merit? What about Avraham? The fact that he endured difficulties, the fact that he tried his best and was successful in overcoming those nisyonos. What we're going to learn tonight is overcoming an Yisrael doesn't mean that it's not a struggle. And I think it'll be very comforting for us to realize that Avraham Avinu struggled. Even though Chazal say he was Amud B'Kulam, he passed all 10 tests. It wasn't easy for Avraham Avinu. And it's okay for us to admit that. And we're going to learn that sugya carefully and really very be'ian tonight. Because the tests of Avraham were not just, again, the tests of Avraham, it's the tests of each and every one of us. It's maybe primarily about us and maybe even less about Avraham. The Chassam Sofer says a remarkable thing. Chassam Sofer writes in source number 3, it's in the Torah's Moshe in this week's Parsha. The Chassam Sofer, the 18th century, the Chassam Sofer says, the tests of Avram and the tests of Yitzhak, the Akedah, you think it's the ultimate test of anyone in history? It's really, again, it's really just setting up the possibility for us to undergo difficult tests. Each one of us in our own life has our own personal Akedah Yitzhak, and to be able to rise to the challenge. V'alukim nisos Avram, says the Chassam Sofer in source number 3, l'fi ani hazdaiti, in my opinion, Lo as Avram v'Yitzchak nasa Kadosh Baruch Hu im yamdu b'tzidkasan. Hashem knew that Avram and Yitzchak were going to pass the test. Well, that itself we can debate. But says the Chacham Sofer, come on, it's Avram, it's Yitzchak. Of course they're going to do what's right. Ki l'nasos ha'uma ha'kedosha ha'sida letzeis emenu. It's not about Avram and Yitzchak who Hashem was testing. But Hashem was testing, so to speak, us as we were contained within Avram and Yitzchak. We all come from Avram and Yitzchak. That's where we come from. So it's the us within them that's being challenged. And for us, that's a real challenge. And the Chassam Sofer goes on and he writes very painfully that when Avram is being sent from one place to the next, that Avram is struggling, and Avram is watching his own child being taken away from him in the tragic way by his own hands, the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu set it up, says the Chassam Sofer, it's bolded in the fifth line, V'zeh yeshorish l'b'neim shesovlinzeh. How many Jews throughout history are going to watch their own children being taken away through the Cossacks and the pogroms and the Holocaust? And where are we going to get the strength to be the Jewish people after going through that? How do we not give up? How are we still here today? And the answer is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put it, again, Behi Baram, who was part of the master plan of creation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Avram tests, and again, that created the possibility of us to walk in their footsteps. Of course they were going to pass the tests. When we try to follow in the footsteps of the Avrams and the Yitzchaks and those who came before us, then we have the possibility, again, of trying to do the same thing. Much has been written about why Hashem gives tests. Why does Hashem need to test people? What kind of crazy game is this? Why does Hashem test people? What does Hashem want from the tests? So I asked that question to a high school student today, and he replied to me, he said, to allow us to get closer to Hashem. To get closer to Hashem through our tests. And there's a tremendous truth to that. But like I said before, lech lecha, as much as it's about getting close to Hashem, it's also about getting close to yourself. It's about discovering parts of yourself that you never would have discovered otherwise. The Ramban, in a famous comment in this week's Parsha, Elokim Nisos Avram, it's not on the page in front of you. But the Ramban very famously says that the purpose of the test is not from the perspective of Hashem. The purpose of the test, God knows what you're going to do. God is all-knowing. He doesn't learn anything new by putting you through the test. Hashem knows who you are. But you sometimes don't know who you are. The Ramban says it's mitzad, the one who's being tested. It's not mitzad the menasa, it's mitzad hamenusa, the one who's being tested. And the Ramban says, because Hashem doesn't want you to be a theoretically great Jew, Hashem says, I'm going to push you, like a coach who knows how to push his players in the right way, to maximize their potential. Talk to professional athletes and ask them, how did you get better? Was it against playing people on your own level? Playing against people who are less talented than you? And invariably you'll find that the athletes who really grew, so to speak, in their sport, say that we always challenge ourselves to play against people who are stronger, who are bigger, who are more talented. And I got beat up on the basketball court, and but that made me a stronger player. So the same thing is true in every aspect of our lives, l'havdil, in much more important arenas of life. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to be able to recognize your own potential, HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts you in a difficult situation, and it hurts. And it's okay, as we're going to learn tonight, it's okay to say, this hurts. It's okay to say, this stinks, I hate this nisayon. We daven every single morning at Birchas HaShachar, at the end of our brachos. We say, Hashem, don't bring me to a day nisayon, I don't want nisayonos, but Hashem says, watch these players. Our players said they've had enough, we're going to do one more round. I'm going to push you through one more time. As the Ramban says, in the words of the Ramban, Hashem doesn't want us to be theoretically good Jews, which of course we all are, because Hashem doesn't want to just reward us for lev tov, for good intentions, but Hashem wants to reward us, in the words of the Ramban, for ma'aseh tov, for good actions. Take your potential and actualize it. And you may never challenge yourself if Hashem doesn't push you. I once heard, one of my Rebbeim once explained, you could try, we do a little experiment here, right? Try to feel your own strength. Push up against the air and try to feel your own strength. Obviously, you don't feel very much. Right? Now place your hand under the chair that you're seated on or on the table in front of you or the chair in front of you and push against it. And all of a sudden you feel your own strength. You can feel your own strength in a way that when there's nothing opposing me, I don't recognize my own strength. The second I encounter an obstacle, when something opposes me, all of a sudden I can feel it internally. I can recognize my own strength. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing. That's what makes it in the sound. HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts us in a situation, right, where the thing that opposes me is helping me to get to know myself better, to deepen my connection to myself. But I want to try to explain tonight, again, in the time that we have, what is it that makes a Nisayon Nisayon? What happens during a Nisayon? Because I think if we understand what the greatest tzaddikim say is supposed to happen during a Nisayon, we'll feel better if it's happening to us. There's feelings, there's emotions that we have during a Nisayon. We feel frightened during a Nisayon. We feel overwhelmed during a Nisayon. We feel confused during a Nisayon. Avraham Avinu, according to some Mefarshim, didn't know if Hashem even wanted him to do the Akedah. Kach na es bincha. Please take your son. It's like the parent who says, please clean your room. I have to, or like, this is optional. I'm not sure exactly, right? Can you please take out the garbage? Is that a request, or that's... You're telling me, and just that you're talking in a nice way because you're trying to be nice before you demand of me taking out the garbage. So there's a part, and there's Svarim and Kadoshim that talk about this, that Avram's not even sure. Is this like optional? Do you want me to do this? And then, of course, the parent does the thing like, you know, like, we would be disappointed if, which is like very confused. Like, is that worse than being like disappointed, worse than angry? It's less bad than if you were actually angry at me, right? Like, I'm not angry at you, but I'm disappointed. Like, so like, what is that? What's the perish of disappointed? Right, so nisyonos are confusing. Nisyonos can be very lonely because no one really understands what you're going through except for Hashem. And Hashem seems to not be so available during the nisayon to talk to you sometimes. So the better we're prepared to understand what's happening during a nisayon, the better we'll be able to respond. It's like when I finally realized a couple of years ago that sometimes when I'm feeling down, I'm not sad about anything or upset about something. I'm just tired. I'm just plain exhausted. And the thing that I think is bothering me, I'm not upset. There's nothing that's really upsetting me. I'm just really, really tired. And if I get a good night's sleep, I won't be upset anymore. And I won't feel sad anymore. So when you understand yourself in a deep way, so then it's much easier to deal with life. So tonight, as we learn what Avraham was going through, we'll feel comforted knowing that, yes, even Avraham was going through a tough time. And that will hopefully give us a lot of chizik when we're struggling with our nisyonos. To realize that, yes, tzaddikim also struggle. Now, to be fair, there are those who want to paint a very flowery picture of what Avram was going through, and it's Kodesh Kadashim, what those tzaddikim said. We're going to learn one of them right now. Rav Kook understood that Avram Avinu had no questions. For Avram Avinu, there was no struggle. It's alluded to already in Chazal, in Rashi, in the Pasuk, Vayashkim Avram Baboker, he gets up early in the morning, Zrizus, he's excited to go slaughter his son. We waited 100 years to have. Who God promised him a parak ago is going to be the future of the Jewish people. Parachav Aleph, Kibitzach, Yikar L'Chazara, Parachav Beis, go murder your son. Avram's excited, he gets up early in the morning. Rav Kook, in his way, that only Rav Kook could paint such a picture, in his poetic way, he writes in his commentary on the Siddur, it's very hard Hebrew, I could hardly read it myself. We'll read a couple lines inside and I'll paraphrase the rest of you in English. But it's beautiful words, if you have the patience to read it and to crack the code, it's a magnificent words. Rav Kook writes in his commentary on the Siddur, Vayashkim Avram Baboker. Minuchas HaNefesh, in source number 4. Menuchas ha-nefesh shel ha-neshama ha-kedosha. The peace of mind. Menuchas ha-nefesh. Menuchas ha-nefesh. The peace of mind of this holy soul. Shel Av ha-kadosh, our holy father Avram. Eitan ha-ezrachi. The mighty citizen, the mighty native. Lo nishbasa. It didn't stop for a second. His heart wasn't racing on the way to the Akedah. He didn't lose any sleep, says Rav Kook. He writes in the fourth line, Shenas yisharim b'menucha v'alizas kodesh avra. The night passed peacefully. They say, if it says v'yashkev avram b'boker, he woke up in the morning, I guess that means he slept the night before. Although Tzvi Pesach Frank brings a proof in his commentary, the Hart Tzvi, his Perush on Chumash, his small sefer on Chumash, he brings a proof from Chazal that v'yashkev doesn't always mean waking up. So it could be Avram was up all night tossing and turning and didn't get a wink of sleep. But Rav Kook says, nah, he slept fine. What's the big deal? He's just going to kill Yitzchak tomorrow. He gets up early because, Mistama Avram, who created Shachris with Davin Vasikin, and he gets up early in the morning, but he got a good night's sleep, and he gets up with great zeal and great passion. Rav Kook continues in the second paragraph, describing how, even though this was against human nature, for Avram it was a breeze, it was no big deal. And he goes at the end, Rav Kook writes in the last line of the second little paragraph, he says, "Ves Yitzchak lokach b'tor b'no." He didn't ignore the fact that Yitzchak was his son, right? Which might be a cognitive dissonance to be able to handle such a tragic and traumatic experience. Pretend Yitzchak's not actually my son, and pretend like block everything out. No, he knows Yitzchak's his son. That's why the whole time there, the psukim say, "Avi b'ni," my father, my son, and no, father and son, walking together. Ve'yelchu shneim yachtav. Great excitement, great enthusiasm, doing the ratzon Hashem. Says Rav Kook, Mamula be'esha chayim shal ahavaso amuka, filled with a fiery love and passion for the creator of the universe, to do exactly what Hashem wants. It's a beautiful picture. It's a beautiful poetic image that Rav Kook is painting. But its beauty is its pain for us, because we feel like, Rav Kook, I mean, it's beautiful. And if it's true, we'll be makabalim. But then Avram's in a totally different league, and there's nothing we can learn from this. Because we're not going through our nisyonos as if it's just a breeze, and it's Ratzon Hashem, and I'm filled with a feeling of Ava, and I'm overjoyed, and I get up early to get back to my life's struggles. No such thing. So its beauty is its pain for us. On the other side of the equation, let's compare how Rav Soloveitchik saw the Akedah. And in the pain of Rav Soloveitchik's words, we're actually going to find much more comfort than in the beauty and the sweetness of Rav Kook's words, I think, in my opinion. You can tell me if you disagree. The Rav, in a magnificent piece in the Divrei Hashkafa, Rav Soloveitchik says, I'm not going to gloss over anything here. Akedat Yitzchak was horrible. It was not fun. The Rav was an existentialist philosopher, secondary, of course, to his being a Talmud Chacham and a great Jew. Rav Soloveitchik, the way that many existentialist philosophers, the famous passage from Soren Kierkegaard, his Faith and Trembling, describing what it was like by Akedas Yitzchak. Many philosophers throughout history questioned the moral appropriateness of Akedas Yitzchak. And again, it's not for us to question God, but it is for us to grapple and try to understand why it is that Hashem set things up the way that he did. And Rav Soloveitchik didn't mince his words. Listen to the words of the Rav. I recoil from all talk that goes round and round the single topic, that the observance of mitzvos is beneficial for digestion, for sound sleep, for family harmony, and for social position. Living a life of Torah mitzvos, yeah, it's great. It's great for your family. My wife loves when I go to Shalosh Shos every Shabbos afternoon. She loves it. It's always like exactly at bedtime. She loves it. Right? I once heard Rabbi Yehoshua Jacobson. He said, Yaakov, right, Avram created Shachris, Yitzchak created Mincha, and Yaakov created Maariv. Why did Yaakov Avinu create Maariv? So he says, I can't do it justice, Rabbi Yehoshua Jacobson's a great Talmud Chacham, a great performer also. So he said, Yaakov comes home, right? He comes home after a long day of learning in Koilo. Yaakov each time Yoshev Olim. And he comes in and he sees, Reuven has a runny nose and needs to go to the doctor, and Shimon needs help with his homework, and Levi needs this, and And Yaakov's poor Rebbetzins are standing there looking for, 12 kids, sizable family. And as they're asking, maybe you can do this, maybe you can do that, Yaakov, Maariv, I gotta go to Maariv, I'm sorry, I'll be back in just 15 minutes, and then an hour and a half later, you mosey back in, and by then everyone's sleeping, and dinner is waiting on the table, and so Yaakov was the one who thought of this brilliant Einfall called Maariv. Yeah? So the Rav says, come on, let's be honest. It's not so easy to sleep if you're actually thinking about your Judaism. It's not always good for Shalom Bayis. It's not always good for social position, especially if you work in a secular work setting with non-Jews who have very different values often. The religious act is fundamentally an experience of suffering. Now, the Rav loved Yiddishkeit, but the Rav also was honest that it's hard. When man meets God, God demands self-sacrifice, which expresses itself in struggle with his primitive passions, in breaking his will, in accepting a transcendental burden, in giving up exaggerated carnal desire, in occasional withdrawal from the sweet and pleasant, in dedication to the strangely bitter, like Mara, in clash with secular rule, and in his yearning for a paradoxical world that is incomprehensible to others. Offer your sacrifice. That's what Hashem says to every one of us. This is the fundamental command given to the man of religion. The chosen of the nation, from the moment they revealed God, occupied themselves in a continual act of sacrifice. Our whole life is one big Akedas Yitzchak. Continues the Rav where it's bolded. God says to Avraham, take now your son, your only one, whom you love, Isaac. Hashem is very clear as Rashi goes through each of those phrases. That is to say, I demand of you the greatest sacrifice. I want your son who is your only son, and also the one whom you love. Do not fool yourself to think that after you obey me and bring your son up as a burnt offering, I'll give you another son in place of Yitzhak. No, this is your only son. This is it, Avram. It's all over. Your whole life's work is coming crashing down. When Yitzhak will be slaughtered on the altar, you will remain alone and childless. You will not have another child. You will live your life in incomparable solitude. I want your only son who is irreplaceable. Neither should you think that you will succeed to forget Yitzhak and remove him from your mind. All your life you will think about it. I'm interested in your son whom you love and who you'll love forever. You'll spend your nights awake picking at your emotional wounds. Look at these words of the Rav. Out of your sleep, you're going to call for Yitzhak. When you wake up, you'll find your tent desolate and forsaken. Rav Soloveitchik, after his wife passed away, he spoke personally about his own experience with this. Waking up in the middle of the night, going to check on his wife, who was sick, and then realizing she was no longer. Your life will turn into a long chain of emotional suffering, and nevertheless, I demand this sacrifice. Hashem says, I know what I'm asking for. I know exactly what I'm asking for. We don't understand. This is the loving God that we talk about. And Ani Ma'amin B'Emunah Shlema, yes, that everything Hashem does is for the good. How it's for the good, don't ask me. And probably the person who's trying to explain it to you doesn't know what they're talking about. It could be so bold as to say such a thing. Right? But I know that Hashem somehow looks at all of history. And Hashem, who operates outside of time, has a way to pay us back for our suffering. It doesn't mean that when we're living in it, it's fun and games and we have to put a smile on. It's not so easy. Clearly, the experience which was rooted in dread and suffering ended in ceaseless joy. Now, right? Needless to say, when it worked out in the end, the Akedah turned from the greatest sadness to the greatest joy. When Avram removed his son from the altar at the angel's command, his suffering turned into everlasting gladness. His dread into perpetual happiness. That's what's going to happen to us also. Our suffering is not in vain. The religious act begins with the sacrifice of oneself and ends with the finding of that self. Lech lecha. Exactly the medrash we started with. Lech lecha, go to yourself. But man cannot find himself, says the Rav in conclusion, man cannot find himself without sacrificing himself prior to the finding. If you're not willing to let go and to trust the Kadosh Baruch Hu, if you're not willing to go through the pain that the Rav is describing here of the Nisan, and again, we don't choose it, we daven against it. Hashem, don't bring me nisyonos. But when Hashem puts us in it, Hashem forces us down that road, we have to trust that Hashem knows what He's doing. And when I'm willing to trust the Kadosh Baruch Hu, then maybe even in my lifetime, maybe a little bit while you're going through it. Maybe not. But if you're willing to trust the Kadosh Baruch Hu, really trust Hashem, maybe you'll be able to say, you know what, I even know why I went through that hard time. I see the bracha. Or maybe not. Maybe you'll take it to the end of your life not knowing, but I promise you eventually you'll get your answer. I saw a story printed in the translator's introduction to a small volume called Emunah Bitachon by Shmuel Hamaner. It was translated many years ago. It was like an old little pocket-sized, Musar book. But the author, Kalman Gross, who translated it, in the Hakdam, he told the following story, and it's a very powerful story. It's a sad story, it's a confusing story, but it's a powerful story. I want you to take a look at this. Source number 6. A story is told of a great Hasidic Rebbe, and keep the source sheets and cut out whichever piece you like and stick it in your wallet or hang it on your fridge. A story is told of a great Hasidic Rebbe who was visited by a woman who wanted his help. Her only son was desperately ill with leukemia, and according to the doctors at least, it would only be a matter of months before he would succumb. The mother, trembling with fear, spoke to the Rebbe while tears rolled down her cheeks. The Rebbe looked into the mother's eyes and said, "If you knew that it was God's will, would you be willing to let your son die? Could you give him up if you knew that God wanted him?" That is not a comfortable question. The poor mother just sat there looking back at the Rebbe. After a long struggle with her emotions, she finally replied, "Yes. If I knew for certain that it was God's will, then I'd be willing to give up the boy." The Rebbe nodded and said, "Now we can together, right now, we can pray for the boy." He then offered a prayer for the youth, surrendering him completely to the wisdom and mercy of God. 3 days later, the boy was released from the hospital. Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan Zatzal tells the story. He knew the boy. The boy is now a grown man. If you're not willing to trust the Kaddish Baruch, if you're not willing to go all in, then I can't negotiate. I can't find myself. That's what Rav Soloveitchik is saying. It's that willingness to make the ultimate sacrifice, which allows us to take the Yitzchak, so to speak, off the altar. Hopefully in our own lifetime, in a way that we can see, in a way we can understand. But certainly, again, it at least gives us the chizuk to know that it's going to work out for the best. Eventually, it's going to work out for the best. So who's right? Let's roll back the clock. Let's go back. Let's look at the tape. Did Avram sleep the night before the Akedah, or was he tossing and turning? About such a machlokas from Kukr of Salvechik, we say, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim? That seems impossible. Was he sleeping, or was he not sleeping? Ani mamin, in some cryptic way, we could say, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. Maybe he was sleeping, and maybe he was tossing and turning at the same time. Maybe. I don't know exactly how to explain that. Libi Omerli, that you could say such a thing. Right? But I think many of us feel that the Rav's presentation of the Akedah is just more true to our experience. It hurts to go through an Nisayon. But we're trying our best to do it nonetheless. Is it normal for a person to feel lonely during an Nisayon? Is it normal for a person to feel frustrated that God is not responding? I've been davening and davening. People get so frustrated with davening and davening and davening. Hashem, say something back. You never talk back. One of the biggest frustrations people have with davening, it's not a dialogue, it's a monologue. So frustrating. So I'll tell you a mashal from Rav Avadi Yosef, who was recently his yard site. Chacham Avadi Yosef Zatzal, one of the greatest Torah geniuses, not only of our time, but the amount of Torah that mind had amassed. Avadi Yosef literally knew thousands of books, Baal Peh. Literally, that's not B'li Guzma at all. He was a walking library. Mamish, the books that we've never even heard of. We couldn't even, read if we spent a lifetime just trying to read it cover to cover. He had mastered the whole thing, memorized it word for word. It's a different, totally different level that someone like that lives in our times. Chacham Avadi Yosef was once approached by a person who said to him, "Maran," as the Sfardim referred to the great Gom, "Maran, I have a lot of nisyonot in my life. I'm struggling. And I feel like I'm always looking for a response for Hashem. I'm looking for the fingerprints of Hashem. I want to hear Hashem's voice. I want to know what He wants. And the silence is deafening. Hashem, where are you?" And he asked Rav Avadi Yosef, "What should I do?" So Rav Avadi Yosef gave a mashal. Now again, nothing I say tonight solves any of the problems that we all have, right? But I think it's a very good mashal. Chacham Avadia said to this person, "Did you ever go to school?" So he said, "Of course. Maran, of course I went to school." He said, "Did you ever take a test in school?" So he said, "Of course I took a test." So he says, "So tell me, what is it like when you're in the middle of a test?" So the fellow says, "Well, when the teacher gives the test, the students have to sit quietly, and the teacher also sits at the desk quietly. The teacher creates and insists that the atmosphere in the room should be quiet. There's no conversation during the test. That's grounds for failing the test. There's no conversation during the test." So Rav Avadi Yosef says, "That's exactly what happens when we're going through an Nisayon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when He's giving us the test, when He's administering the test, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sitting there quietly." Now, Rav Avadi Yosef said, "But the teacher is watching, especially during the test. The teacher is keeping an extra close eye on the students." And that's also exactly what's happening to us. When you're going through the Nisayon, part of what makes it a Nisayon is the fact that you can't say, "Wait, teacher, you taught us this last week. Explain it to me again." No, we can't talk about that right now. Now you're in it. Now you're living the test. After the test, of course the good teacher wants to explain everything. But during the test, the teacher demands. The teacher insists upon silence, not only for the students, but the teacher as well. But to not think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is watching and paying close attention, that Hashem is not suffering with us, like the Navi Yeshaya said, "B'chol tzarasam lo tzar," in all of our pain, it's His pain. It's an interesting pasuk. It's a Kriya Niksiv. The way that the pasuk is written is lo with an aleph. "B'chol tzarasam lo tzar." Lo tzar, not tzar. The way that it's pronounced, we pronounce it more or less the same, but it's lamed vav, lo tzar, in all of the suffering, lo tzar. He feels our pain. Hashem feels our pain. It's a Kriya Niksiv. It fits beautifully with Rav Avadia's mashal. B'shas Ksiva. When you're sitting there taking the test and you're busy writing your answers, trying to come up with the best answers you have, so you feel like, B'chol tzar rasa, I'm suffering, and the teacher's just sitting there getting a free period. Lo tzar, I don't feel my pain. Right? But B'shas Kri, when it's time to read the test, when it's time to talk about it, when it's time to reflect on how you did on the test, when it's time afterwards for the teacher to assess not only the student's success, but the teacher's success in conveying the material, then the teacher says, if you fail, lo tzar. When we talk about it, when it's time for the Kri, then lo tzar, I feel your pain. Then we can finally talk about it. But it's reasonable for us to feel that when we're going through an Nisayon, it is lonely. And Hashem is quiet. And that's part of what makes it a test. It doesn't make us feel better necessarily, but at least now we know, when we're feeling frustrated, that's part of what makes it a Nisayon. Hashem Yishmua, we had the schus, the Tinek and Bergenfield community last Shabbos had the schus of hosting the President Sakharchev, a Rebbe Shlita from Eretz Yisrael, thanks to the Greenspans, making that a reality for us. So the Shem Yishmuel is the second Rebbe of Sakharchev, Shmuel Bornstein, the son of the Avni Nezer, a grandson of the Kotzker Rebbe. So he writes a very real piece in this week's Parshan, source number 7. Bayoma Shlishi v'yisa Avram es Einav, Avram's on his way to the Akedah, he lifts up his eyes. Rashi asks the question, why did Hashem schlep him for 3 days? Why does he have to travel such a distance to perform the Akedah? So people shouldn't think that Avram rushed into it. If Avram's going to do this, he needs to do it with Yishav Adas. Give him time to make a real decision. We don't want people after that to say, well, Avram wasn't thinking so. You didn't give him time to think about it. Hashem gave Avram time to think about it. But as Avram is on his way to the Akedah, it takes 3 days. Hashem Yishmuel says, why 3 days? Why not 2 days? Why not 3 weeks? Why 3 days? So he writes in the second paragraph in source 7. V'nira od lomar. First, we need to understand the end of that pasuk. Listen to this. What's the first part of the pasuk? It was on the third day that Avram lifted his eyes and he sees the place. How does the pasuk describe it? Vayar tamakum merachuk. He sees the place at a distance. But we all know, if you've ever paid a shiva call, hamakum yinachin eschem b'soch shar, right? Hamakum, who's hamakum? The place should comfort you? Chazal say in the Medrash that God is called hamakum because Hashem is everywhere. Hashem is not only found in Shul, or in the Beis HaMikdash, or in the Beis Medrash. Hashem is found everywhere in the world. Hashem is Hamakom. So Avram's on his way to the Akedah, Vayar es Hamakom Merachok. The pain of Avram makes us feel better. Avram feels that what? He sees Hashem at a distance. He feels distant from Hashem. Vayar es Hamakom is a word, is a reference. It's not just he saw the mountain far away. He sees Hashem, and Hashem seems far away from him. It hurts, like the Rav describes. He's in a lot of pain. Why 3 days, says the Shem Yishmuel, explaining from his father, the Avni Nezer? Because when a person gets a nevuah, you don't wake up the next day and forget about it. The same way, he says in Halacha, we can say Havdal until when? Until Tuesday. Because Shabbos makes a roshem for 3 days. So you know why Hashem had Avram schlep around for 3 days? Hashem wanted that clarity to wear off. Hashem wanted Avram to let the nevuah dissipate a little bit, till there's nothing left other than what? Other than Avram at his core. When there's nothing left other... I don't want... If it's too easy for you, then it's not an Nisayon. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so obvious in your life, that's not called a test. I have to take away that awareness in order for you to be able to choose. Why does Hashem do that? What is Hashem trying to get out of that? Why does Hashem disconnect us from Him in order to be able to discover Him? So I go back to the Ramban, because an Nisayon is not only about discovering Hashem, it's about discovering ourselves. It's about turning inward and getting down to the core of who we are and taking away our madregos, to use the words of the Shem Yishmuel, and taking away our hiskashrus, in the words of the Mori Naim in source number 8, going back to the Rebbe of Chernobyl, and leaving us in a very raw and naked and fragile state. And still being able to trust our intuition, my neshama, my internal GPS, that I can still make the right choice. I can still choose Hashem, even if I don't have all of the things that would make me want to choose Hashem. That's what makes the Nisayon. That's what builds a person. Says the Avnei Nezer, again, the father of the Shem Yishmuel, quoted in source number 9 in the Neos Hadesha. How did the Nisayonos begin? Lech Lecha. Explains the first Rebbe of Sakharchev, or Avram of Sakharchev, the Avnei Nezer. Source number 9. Yesh ledaktik betevis lecha. What is Lech Lecha? Like we started, the beginning of the test is Lech Lecha, the end of the test is Lech Lecha. Yesh lomar ki be'eis ha-Nisayon nitla mimenu hadveikus. Whatever you thought your relationship was with God, Hashem leaves you, he just leaves you dangling out there. He takes away the connection. Dimlo kein lo hayin nisayon. Because if you feel that you're totally in a Kadosh Baruch Hu's, the palm of his hand, so then that's not a nisayon. Now that hurts, and it's okay to admit that, because it hurt for Avram, and it certainly hurts for us. And that's what the Medrash, he brings the Medrash. We'll skip it for the moment, go to the last two lines. Val kein b'nisyono harishon amar lo. So what does Hashem say to Avram? Lech lecha. It's not only like I told you before, like the Al-Sheikh and others explained, go to yourself, like the Babat Rebbe explained, go to yourself. Right? But it's go on your own. Lech lecha, says the Sakat Shavar. Perish, she'oz tiyeh la'atzmecha, below dveikas, b'chadei she'yan yisayim. Lech lecha, you're going on your own. Taking away everything you've built up, Avraham Avinu, everything you've worked to acquire over the course of your lifetime, I'm taking it all away, and I'm asking you, without all of the madregos, without all of the giluyim, the revelations, the nevuah, I want just pure Avraham. I want just you, pure Avraham, at your core. I want you to be able to have this nisayon, and I believe that you can still pass the test. That's the challenge of a nisayon, but that's comforting for us, to know that it can be lonely, it can be confusing, it can be overwhelming. We can feel distant from Hashem when we're going through the Nisayon. That's not a contradiction. That doesn't mean you're failing the Nisayon, is what I'm trying to say. You can be passing the Nisayon and still be feeling frustrated. That's perfectly normal and perfectly okay for Avram, and it's perfectly okay for us. A Nisayon is deep, it's raw, and it's very personal. Writes of Tzadik HaKohen of Lublin in the second to last source. V'chol Nisayon hu be'inyan chadash. Rav Tzadik writes in Yisrael Kedoshim on the final page. Kol Nisayon hu be'inyan chadash. Every Nisayon is tailor-made. It's a new nisayon. No one's ever had that nisayon before. What do you mean? I know someone who had the same illness. I know someone who went through the same financial struggle. I know someone who went through the same difficult marital discord. Right? But it's not the same. Similar, but it's not the same. Every nisayon is an inyan chadash. Shelo nisnasa adayin odom me'olam binyan zeh. It's just for you. And that's also part of the loneliness. No one can understand you. Not even your closest loved ones can fully understand what you're going through. But that's what makes it a nisayon. It's Hashem pulling back and also Hashem presenting Himself to you in the most real and raw way that you've ever encountered. It's a totally new thing. He says when David struggles with Bathsheba, oh, we've seen this before. That's Yosef and Eishes Potiphar, but it's different. Similar, it's a struggle of Arayos of sorts, but it's different. Yosef's was different than David's struggle. And the same thing is true for every person's nisayon. Not only is that true individually, but it's true collectively as well. Says Rav Tzadik where it's bolded, V'chein kol ha'nisyonos shebechol dor v'dor hu be'inyanim mechudashim she'adayin lo nisgaber al zeh shum adam. Every generation has unique nisyonos. What makes Tavshin Ayin Tes different than Tavshin Ayin Ches? The tzaddikim even explain. Every year on Rosh Hashanah we blow the shofar and we stop blowing the shofar on Erev Rosh Hashanah to trick the Satan. So stupid Satan, when are you going to learn by now what we do every single year? So the Svarim explained, because it's a different Satan every year. It's different nisyonos, it's different challenges. It's different Yetzer Hara. It's different needs, spiritual needs, different challenges to help us to actualize our potential. It's things that no one's ever been tested in before. And when we overcome that nisayon, we change the entire course and the trajectory of humanity, of world history. Because every person's nisayon is entirely personal. It's entirely unique. I want to end with a very painful story. A very powerful story, and I hope you'll be as blown away from the story as I was when I first read it. In the Sefer Or HaShabbos, Rav Yitzchak David Grossman. Rav Yitzchak David Grossman, of course, Shlita is a Rav in Eretz Yisrael. I'm sure some people are familiar with his work, Migdal HaEmek, Migdal Or, the disco rabbi, as he was known in his prime, going to try to teach Judaism in places where people were running from their Judaism. Amazing person. So he put out a book with different divrei Torah on the parsha, usually interwoven with amazing personal stories. And he tells the following story. He says there was a couple that waited 19 years to have a child. 19 years they were waiting to have a child. 19 years. Can you imagine how many times trying and trying and trying? When do you give up? 5 years, 10 years, 15 years? After 19 years, the woman finally became pregnant, and she gave birth to a baby girl. And you can imagine the joy, the unbelievable feeling that filled that hospital room. Grossman described the Sefer. He says, Rahmana Litzlan, a few hours after this child, this baby girl, a healthy baby girl had been born. Somehow in the hospital, some craziness, she contracted some deadly virus. Things very quickly spiraled out of control. And in a couple of hours, the child that they had waited 19 years to hold in their arms was dead. And the doctors were terrified to tell the mother. And they told the mother, and Rav Grossman writes in Source 11, you can see in the first paragraph of the line, Acha'im kibla sadvarim b'shivyon nefesh. In some superhuman way, the mother was makabalit, with some sense of yishuv adas. She says, I want to hold my dead daughter. I want to hold my child. They bring her the daughter. She's holding the child in her arms for about a half hour. Tears streaming down her face, falling onto the cheeks, he describes here, of the child. A child who he writes, who barely tasted any life, a few moments of air in this world before she was taken back to her supernal source. And then the mother says, I want a minion of men to come to my hospital. I want to name the baby. Which is a practice. There is such a thing to name a child, even a child who is not Zocha, to have a Shem Yisrael. And she calls, he gathers, okay, whatever you want, lady, you know. You've been through anything, we'll get you whatever you want. A minion gathers, and someone gets up to recite the Misha Berach. And he writes here in this last paragraph, Misha Berach Avoseinu, Herim Echad Min HaChevra B'Kola. One of the men gathered there begins to recite the Misha Berach. And her name will be called Yisrael. Her name will be called. The mother says, I want to name my daughter Emuna. I want to name my daughter Emuna. And the mother explains to the shock of everyone in the room that I chose the name Emuna for the child who had only had a few moments in this world. Lama Emuna? She said, Ki b'chol pam. Anytime I mention my daughter and I think about my daughter and I remember my daughter. Miyad Eida Lischazik Be'amuna Sha'kol Mideya Kodesh Baruch Hu Hu Natan V'Hu Lakach. It's all in Hashem's hands, and I'm not going to forget that for a second. I don't like what I'm going through, needless to say. When Rav Grossman heard this story, because Rav Grossman was invited to this woman to try to be Mechazik her in the aftermath of this tragedy, to give her Chizik, and she was struggling, Rav Grossman said to her, I've never seen a person have a Muna like this, and I give you a bracha that a Kodesh Baruch Hu should very quickly bless you with a healthy child. V'kach Hava. Someone in my shul is very close with Rav Grossman, told me recently, he came over, he said, did you see that story? I said, I saw that first story. It's one of the first stories in the series. I said, I saw that story. So he said, I spoke to Rav Grossman recently, and he told me that they just brought the child, they had a baby boy a year later, and they said they just brought this young boy to Rav Grossman for his upsharing. So the story's only a couple years ago. That this woman could name a child who died after waiting 19 years, to name such a child Emuna, it's superhuman. So I leave you with the final quote. It's an unidentified quote, but it's an amazing quote. For a long time, it has seemed to me that life was about to begin real life. How many of us want to just get through our nisyonos to start really living without all the distractions of my nisyonos? But there was always some obstacle in the way, something to be got through first, some unfinished business, time still to be served, a debt to be paid. Then life would begin. Until at last it dawned on me that these obstacles were my life, that the nisyonos are making me who I am. So like we daven every morning, Kodesh Baruch Hu shouldn't bring us to nisyonos. But when Hashem pushes us, and when Hashem puts us in that situation, and we're struggling, like Avram was struggling, we should try to maintain our emuna amidst that struggle. It's okay to be honest that it hurts. There's nothing wrong with saying that. It's okay to say it's lonely. But to remind ourselves and to feel and to really believe that Kodesh Baruch Hu has a master plan, and that in some deep secretive way our nisyonos make us into who we're supposed to be. Again, halavai, we shouldn't have nisyonos. But when we are tested, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give us that inner strength and fortitude to overcome all of life's challenges. Shabbos. Marv is